the young girls and the old ladies, you see them carrying around huge bundles of sticks for firewood. On their heads they carry them. Sometimes they're very, very thorny too, but then they have these little round things to keep it off of their head. And they carry them. And then sometimes, due to one reason or another, they have to put them down. But unless there's two or three in the party, they're not strong enough or to put them on their own head. It's very difficult to put it on your own head. So there was one lady who was all alone, and she had to put her bundle down. And there was no one around. She was in the forest. She was gathering wood. And she was in the forest, and there was no one around to help her put it on her head. So she began to pray to Krishna. My dear Krishna, please come, I need you. Because everyone in India is so faithful. So because of the depth of her faith, Krishna actually appeared and said, "You called? What do you want? Whatever you want, I'll give you." And she said, "Please help me put this on my head." Why do we laugh? Because she could have asked for billions of rupees. She could have asked to go back to Godhead. But her mind was focused on this immediate little problem. And therefore, we could say she missed a great opportunity. But of course, she saw Krishna, so... But that's a criticism of materialistic devotees who pray to Krishna for things that anyone can help them with, when Krishna is capable himself of giving the greatest thing. So when you asked me, if you wish, you would stand there. So that was very kind of you. But if I was wishing, if I was in the mood for wishing, that's not what I would wish for. At least I would wish for a new microphone stand that worked. Be a lot easier. But there are greater things. Do you ever, that sometimes happens. You find yourself thinking, you know, when just walking down the street or you're doing something, say, "Oh, I wish this would happen." And then suddenly it happens. And you think, "Oh no, only if I had wished to love Krishna to be an actual good devotee." Since Krishna was fulfilling desires at that particular time.
Mm-hmm. I think the best idea is if you can hide 2-3 microphone wings, you know. So when you do, they can come down like okay. Can come down.
Good
and
point.
Pull it up.
So just recently some wrestler was trying to there was some wrestling, I don't know, it was in England or something like that. And he was trying to make a grand entrance into the arena. So they hung him from a crane and they lowered him into the arena. But unfortunately the rope broke and he killed him and he died. So if someone is hanging those microphones, you should be very careful to be chanting at least. So in case... yeah. This is something for you to think about how to accomplish a service. Now, back to the Bhagavatam. Om Ganatamanandasya Janajana Salakaya Taksusamilitam Dena Tasmai Sri Gurve Nama Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Dena Vitale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapandantikam Vanjikopaturvascha Kripasindubayavacha Patitanam Pavinebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namah. We read yesterday from the 26th chapter of the third canto, which is the second chapter describing the teachings of Kapila Dev to his mother Devahuti. And in this chapter, which is entitled The Fundamental Principles of Material Existence, Kapila Muni is describing the universe. and how it creates. It is how it is created. And the primal, the sarva karana karanam, the cause of all causes, is the Lord. And Kapila Muni describes how the Lord creates the living entity and the Lord's gunamayi, or maya energy, and how this material energy is there and the living entity becomes bewildered by it, and he forgets his actual identity as an eternal spirit soul. And he identifies in illusion with the material body. And how unfortunate that is for the eternal living entity, because his natural birthright, so to speak, his natural inheritance, so to speak, is eternal life of bliss and knowledge with Krishna. But instead, due to the false ego, or due to the tendency to turn, due to the free will and his turning his back on Krishna, rather than having his true natural identity, eternity, bliss and knowledge, he ends up with a material identity, a succession of material identities, which each one promise some sort of happiness. There's a happiness, a pleasure that each body is built for. A bird can fly in the sky, a human being has his intelligence, even a worm has his pleasure. Every material body has a particular pleasure, has its own pleasures. So the promise of pleasure is always there in the succession of bodies, but the ultimate delivery of the material body is suffering for the soul. It's all very unfortunate, very unfortunate. In illusion, he turns from Krishna. So now, Devahuti, after hearing this, asks a question. Devahuti Uvacha. Prakriti purushasyapi lakshanam purushottama bruhi karanayo yasya sarasatscha yaratmakam. Devahuti said, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, kindly explain the characteristics of the Supreme Person and his energies. For both of these are the cause of this manifest and unmanifest creation. So she has heard about the living entities dealing with the material energy. And now she wants to know about the Lord's dealing with the material energy. Because this material energy and the Lord, as the verse said, are both of them are the causes of the manifest and unmanifest creation. The creation sometimes is there, it is manifest, and sometimes it is unmanifest, it is wound up. It still exists, but in an unmanifest state. So the cause of both of those are the material energy, which is the upadankaran, or the ingredient cause, or the immediate cause, and the ultimate cause is Krishna, because he empowers the material energy in the creation and the unmanifestation, or the winding up or destruction of the material world. So now she's asking about that. She's heard about the living entity and how the living entity deals with the material energy. Now how about the Lord and his dealing with the material energy? So Kapila Muni, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Yattatri gunam avyaktam nityam sarasattatmakam pradhanam prakritim prahor avishesham visheshavat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, so he's beginning the explanation, the unmanifested eternal combination of the three modes is the cause of the manifest state and is called pradhan. It is called prakriti when in the manifested stage of existence. So in this verse, there are three words used to describe the material energy: avyakta, which means unmanifest; Prakriti, which means nature, and Pradhan, which means the primal or chief. So there are technical, sometimes these words are used interchangeably in the Bhagavatam, but here a technical differentiation is made as to what these terms exactly mean. So Prabhupada explains it in the purport, at least he explains all three. The Lord points out material nature in its subtle stage, which is called pradhan, and he analyzes this pradhan. The explanation of pradhan and prakriti, the difference, explanation of pradhan and prakriti, is that pradhan is the subtle, undifferentiated sum total of all material elements. Although they are undifferentiated, one can understand that the total material elements are contained therein. So it is like all the ingredients of the material energy in an undifferentiated, unmanifest stage that is very, very, very subtle. That is called pradhan. There is no, even though the potential, it's the material energy in a completely potential stage. Nothing exists in one sense, or it exists only in the subtlest. It's almost spirited. This pradhana is sometimes called Brahman. It is so close to spirit. It is just like a cloud. It is described in the Bhagavatam in the first canto, like a cloud covering the spirit, the Brahmajyoti, or the spiritual energy. So a cloud is so fine and subtle, it doesn't have any existence. It looks like it has existence, but it's so fine. So that is called pradhan, or the first stage of the material ingredients, or the material manifestation. It is fine, it is subtle, and it is undifferentiated. Everything exists only in potential form. When the total material elements are manifested by the interaction of the three modes of material nature, the manifestation is called prakriti. Also, it is called mahatattva sometimes. So prakriti means nature, and pradhan means the primal stage of that nature. Impersonalists say that Brahman is without variegatedness and without differentiation. One may say that pradhan is in the Brahman stage, but actually the Brahman stage is not pradhan. Pradhan is distinct from Brahman because in Brahman there is no existence of the material modes of nature. One may argue that the Mahatattva is also different from pradhan, because in the Mahatattva there are manifestations. The actual explanation of pradhan, however, is given here. When the cause and effect are not clearly manifest of vyakta, so they are unmanifest of vyakta, the reaction of the total elements does not take place, and that stage of material nature is called pradhan. Pradhan is not the time element, because in the time element there are actions and reactions, creation and annihilation. Nor is it the jiva or marginal potency of the living entity or designated conditioned living entities, because the designations of the living entity are not eternal. One adjective used in this connection is nitya, which indicates eternality. Therefore, the condition of material nature immediately previous to its manifestation is called pradhan. Okay, so some in different parts even of the third canto it's described in other ways, but here it's described in a very simple and clear way. The pradhan is everything is existing. It's not Brahman, because the three modes of material nature are not present in Brahman, because Brahman is spiritual. And the modes of material nature, even while they are in an unmanifest stage, are material. Okay, so this is pradhan, the first ingredient. The aggregate elements, namely the five gross elements, the five subtle elements, the four internal senses, the five senses for gathering knowledge, and the five outward organs of action are known as pradhan. So these are that which is within the pradhan, but in an unmanifest stage in potential state. So there are 24 elements. And the next verse is, this is verse 11. In 12 to 14, these will be explained so it's a little more clear what those 24 elements are. There, text 12, there are five gross elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. There are also five subtle elements, smell, taste, color, touch, and sound. So these are also the objects of the senses. This is what the five senses perceive. So there's the five gross elements, the five sense objects, text 13. The senses for acquiring knowledge and the organs for action, number 10. So there are five knowledge-acquiring senses, the auditory sense, the sense of taste, the tactile sense, the sense of sight, the sense of smell. And then there are the active organs for gathering knowledge, for activity, which are speaking, the organ for speaking, for working, like hands or legs, or traveling, legs, generating and evacuating. So this is naming 20 of the 24 elements. So 15 of those, the knowledge acquiring senses and the sense objects and the five gross elements, we will hear how they're produced from a little later on, how they attain their more gross form. So then there's four more elements in this pradana, in an unmanifest state. The internal subtle senses are experienced as having four aspects, in the shape of the mind, intelligence, ego, and contaminated consciousness. Contaminated consciousness, the Sanskrit is citta. Bhumi rupona lovayu kam mano buddha evacha. Kam mano buddhi. Ahankara. So these three plus citta. So these are four. So that's 24. Now this contaminated consciousness, we will find out later, and Prabhupada explains in the purport, it's called ahankara, false ego. So what we're going to understand now, this is the fundamental principles of material nature and how the universe is created. And this has been explained previously in this canto as well, as we have already said. So all these are considered the qualified Brahman or Sagun. They have qualities or material qualities. The mixing element, which is known as time, is counted as the 25th element. So now in text 15 through 20 to 18 in the next four verses, the effects of time will be explained. Now, what's been explained in previous explanations earlier in the third canto is that the Lord first exists, then there is this pradana, and it is completely unmanifested in this undifferentiated, subtle state, but yet these 24 elements are there in potential. So then the Lord looks as Karana Dakshay Vishnu, as Mahavishnu, he glances at this pradana, this undifferentiated material energy. And that glance is composed of the living entities and their karma from previous creations, plus the time element. So when the karma of the living entities and the living, without the living entities, the karma won't do anything. And without time, which is like a big stirring, it moves everything. It moves karma. That's what time basically does. And time as an element coming directly from Krishna, from the Paramatma, or Karana Dakshaya Vishnu, or the soul of the entire material existence, it is unstoppable. This is what we should know about time. And Krishna explains this in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Kalosmin lokachaya krit. Time I am, he says, and I have come ultimately to destroy everyone. This is the force of unstoppable time in this world. It is unstoppable because it is Krishna. And when Krishna wants something to go forward, that is practically the definition of unstoppable. This is the force that makes the material nature move. And how does it move? It moves according to the karma of the living entity. Darya te jagat. And in this way, the living entities are co-creators of the material world, along with the Lord. Of course, Krishna is the ultimate creator, but the karma of the living entities, or the material world, is shaped by the karma of the living entities. So the time element injected into the womb of the material nature by the glance of the Lord, along with the karma of the living entities and the jivatmas, the conditioned souls, this will change the pradhan and move it to a more manifested stage from the potential into the actualization of these elements. It will move it forward. So in the 16th verse, the influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is felt in the time factor, unstoppable, which causes fear of death due to the false ego of the deluded soul who has contacted material nature. So it is time, that time factor, and also the time is the chakra of the Lord, the weapon of the Lord. Bhayam dvitiya vinaveshyatasya ishara patasya viparito smriti. This is the effect of time. Everything is... anyway, we'll hear about it. So, Prabhupada explains in the purport towards the end. The fear of death is the action of kala, or the time factor, which represents the influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, time is destructive. Whatever is created is subject to destruction and dissolution, which is the action of time. Time is a representation of the Lord, and it reminds us also that we must surrender unto the Lord. The Lord speaks to every conditioned soul as time. What does that mean? Yes. He's telling every conditioned soul that you are moving towards your death, whether you think you will not surrender to me. Because Krishna is ordering that every living entity should surrender to him. So many living entities think, I will not surrender to Krishna. But Krishna, in the form of time, is the way that every living entity will unwillingly surrender to him. So he's speaking to every conditioned soul as time. He says in Bhagavad Gita that if someone surrenders unto him, then there is no longer any problem of birth and death. We should therefore accept the time factor as the Supreme Personality of Godhead standing before us. This is further explained in the following verse. Kapila Muni says, my dear mother, O daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, the time factor, as I have explained, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom the creation begins as a result of the agitation of the neutral unmanifested nature. So what is that neutral unmanifested nature? That is the pradhan. And because of the time factor's entrance, it moves, and it moves, agitates, and it moves towards manifestation in the creation. Anta parusha rupena kala rupena yo bahi samanveti esha sattvanam bhagavanatma mayaya. By exhibiting his potencies, the Supreme Personality of Godhead adjusts all these different elements, keeping himself within as the Supersoul and without as time. read some of this purport. The minute independence of the conditioned soul is exhibited by his marginal position. If he likes, he can forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead and come into the material existence with a false ego to lord it over material nature. But if he likes, he can turn his face to the service of the Lord. The individual living entity is given that independence. His conditioned life is ended and his life becomes successful as soon as he turns his face to the Lord. But by misusing his independence, he enters into material existence. Yet the Lord is so kind that his super soul, he always remains with the conditioned soul. The concern of the Lord is neither to enjoy nor to suffer from the material body. He remains with the jiva, simply a sanction giver and witness. Upadrashtana manta cha bhakta bhakta maheshvara paramatmati chapyukto deis min within the body purusha para as the supreme person. So he remains as the sanction giver and the witness so that the living entity can receive the results of his activities, good or bad. So that is how the Lord goes within. He goes within the heart of the creation. He goes within the heart of every living entity, within every atom, between every atom. He is everywhere in the creation as the super soul. And outside the body of the conditioned soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead remains as the time factor. According to the Sankhya system of philosophy, there are 25 elements. The 25 elements already described, the 24 elements already described, plus the time factor, makes 25. According to some learned philosophers, the super soul is included to make a total of 26 elements. Now, the next stage of the creation, because this is how the material energy develops. After the Supreme Personality of Godhead impregnates material nature with his internal potency, basically again, he glances at the living entity, that's at the material energy, at the pradhan, and that's its impregnation. This is described in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Tasmad saveshyoneshu murtaya sambhavatya tasan brahma mahadyoniraham bijapada prita. So Krishna glances at the saveshyonesh akantaya murtaya sambhavatya. So he glances at this material energy and impregnates it with the time potency and the living entities and the karma. So then, from that, the sum total, the material nature delivers the sum total of the cosmic intelligence, which is known as Haranyamaya, Haranmaya. This takes place in material nature when she's agitated by the designations of the conditioned soul. Now this Haran Maya will be described later. Haranyagarbha also. So thus, after manifesting variegatedness, the effulgent Mahatattva. So what happens is when because of the action of the time element, the creation moves forward a step, and then it is no longer pradhan or undifferentiated, it is prakriti or the mahatattva. The name changes at this time. Thus, after manifesting variegatedness, the effulgent mahatattva, which contains all the universes within itself, and the universes manifest, and in the universes the Lord will enter. He will enter each universe and bring the creation forward still further. So the effulgent Mahatattva, which contains all the universes within itself, which is the root of all cosmic manifestations, and which is not destroyed at the time of annihilation, swallows the darkness that covered the effulgence at the time of dissolution. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. The idea can be further explained. A person at night remains inactive, covered by the darkness of night. But when he is awakened in the morning, the covering of night or the forgetfulness of the sleeping state disappears. Similarly, when the Mahatattva appears after the night of dissolution, the effulgence is manifested to exhibit the variegatedness of the material world. So, this is wonderful, actually. So the Mahatattva exists, and the Mahatattva is also consciousness. So it's hard, very difficult to put all the pieces together of this, and especially the first few hundred times we hear it. So the creation is going to continuing. Now, inside the universes, well, this is actually possibly before even, this is just in general that's happening, not necessarily inside the universes. This is more a stage, more abstract than that. But the Mahatattva is there, and this Mahatattva is, and the living entities are there. Now, the Mahatattva supplies consciousness for the living entity. And this consciousness, as Prabhupada explains in the 21st verse, or rather the verse explains, Kapila Muni explains, the mode of goodness, which is the clear, sober status of understanding the personality of Godhead, and which is generally called Vasudeva, or consciousness, becomes manifest in the Mahatattva. So there is consciousness, and the living entities will take that consciousness. And this consciousness is pure, it is goodness. And from with that consciousness, this pure consciousness, which is the first thing that's created, if one has that Sudha-Sattva consciousness, one can actually perceive the Supreme Lord. But it doesn't, the creation continues further. So there are many things in unmanifested form. Because so far it hasn't talked about those elements. Those 24 elements, they haven't manifested yet. And in addition, the modes of material nature were in there. So the first thing that is manifest at this stage is consciousness, and the living entities in there are there as well. Then, after the manifestation of the Mahatattva, these features appear simultaneously. As water is in its natural state before coming in contact with earth is clear, sweet, and unruffled, so the characteristic traits of pure consciousness are complete serenity, clarity, and freedom from distraction. So this is basically clear and pure goodness. The material ego springs from the Mahatattva. Now here's where it starts getting even more interesting. This is technical. The material ego springs from the Mahatattva, which evolved from the Lord's own energy. The material ego is endowed predominantly with the active power of three kinds, goodness, passion, and ignorance. It is from these three types of material ego that the mind, the sense of perception, the organs of action, and the gross elements evolve. So everything's going to evolve, start evolving very quickly now. So again, this is what happens. There is consciousness. The first stage, practically, is consciousness. After things are unmanifest as pradhan, then manifest as mahatattva, and consciousness is manifest, pure consciousness. Now, when the living entities who are in this material situation, because they're not in the spiritual world, these are the living entities who are in the material world, conditioned, who are meant for the material world. So when they achieve consciousness, even though consciousness is pure, more or less pure, Sudha-Sattva, because they have turned their back on Krishna, that consciousness is manifested through a false ego, because they cannot have a real ego. Because their real ego, though ego means identity, their real ego is servant of Krishna, and they've rejected that. And yet, as souls, as individuals, they have to have some identity. So that identity And that consciousness manifests false ego, which is the first creation. It's starting to get, so it's going from undifferentiated to very effulgent consciousness. But the souls are in there, and because, and the combination of the souls and the consciousness creates false ego and the modes of material nature, and that false ego is of three different varieties: goodness, passion, ignorance, the three modes of material nature. So from purity, it's getting, purity is subtle. Gradually, gradually, more and more entanglement and more grossness is going to evolve in the creation. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, from the status of pure consciousness, the false ego is born because of misuse of independence. So this is the crux of it. The living entities have independence, and those who misuse their independence, they end up in the material world, and the material nature manifests false ego for them. And it, false ego is the basically the reflection of consciousness in a material atmosphere. It's the reflection of consciousness in matter. That's what false ego basically is. If the living entity uses his independence correctly, he doesn't need this. Chara savabhutani kutosto akshara uchate. That the living entities who are imperfect are all the living entities in this world, but those who are perfect, the akshara, kutosto, they are one with Krishna in desire. And this is our fault. This is the misuse of our independence, that we don't want to be one with Krishna in our desire. We want to be possess an independent desire. And in that independent desire, we are the enjoyers. And because we are not the enjoyers, by constitution, we are constitution, by constitution, Krishna's servant, we have to take shelter of illusion so we can imagine that we are enjoyers and controllers and very important, and that everything is revolving around us and our needs, and we are, this is, so we need false ego, and our illusion just compounds. Factually, we cannot argue about why false ego arises from pure consciousness. Factually, there is always the chance that this will happen, and therefore one has to be very careful. False ego is the basic principle for all material activities which are executed in the modes of material nature. As soon as one deviates from pure Krishna consciousness, he increases his entanglement in material reactions. So much complexity is going to be created based on false ego. The entanglement of materialism is the material mind. And from this material mind, the senses and material organs become manifest. So that sounds somewhat abstract, but actually Prabhupada means some very specific things as the creation develops. So there are three, we're up to the point where the living entity has false ego, and that false ego is of three different varieties: goodness, passion, or it's created. And it has of three different varieties: false ego in the mode of goodness, and false ego in the mode of passion, and false ego in the mode of ignorance. So each one of those different aspects of false ego will create different things, and that's what's Kapila Muni is going to describe. So false ego, and he's going to describe the characteristics of everything that's created. So we're not going to go over everything in all the detail that the verses do. So the first thing is that false ego in the mode of goodness. And from that, it gives rise to the mind. From false ego and the mode of goodness, so 27, 28, and 29 describe false ego and the mode of goodness and what it means and what the manifestations of the mind are and what are the characteristics of the mind. From the false ego of goodness, another transformation takes place. From this evolves the mind, whose thoughts and reflections give rise to desire. And the mind's basic function is to accept and reject. I don't think we have the time to go over the particular characteristics again in great detail. But it basically creates categories. And it places things in categories. That's the basic functioning of the mind. It accepts and rejects. And the amazing thing about the mind, or one of the amazing things about the mind, is that it can accept something one moment, and in 5 seconds later it can reject the same thing. What that means is that it accepts something in the category of this is wanted and desired. The category of desirable things. And then you look more closely at it, and you think, oh, this is horrible actually. I don't want it. So the same thing that you were looking at gets changed its category. It's been rejected in one category and accepted in another category. And before it was accepted in the good category, one category, rejected in another category. This is the mind. And the categorizations of how we place things in different categories is more the function of the intelligence. But the mind is just, that's all it does, accept and reject. But it should be under the guidance of the intelligence. But usually it's the opposite. That the mind decides, I want this. And the intelligence says, but, don't you know that this is... Shut up, I want it. And the mind gets feverish. That's why things like... something like gambling. Now, this creates fever in the mind. And actually, literally, physically, the mind gets hot and overheated. And that's why we have the expression, cool down, cool down. Take a few breaths, cool down, cool off, chill out. Because the mind gets overheated, feverish. It wants. Practically speaking, the mind will want the whole world. If it's in that mood, and it still won't be satisfied. So the thoughts and reflections of the mind give rise to desire. The mind of the living entity is known by the name of Lord Aniruddha, the supreme ruler of the senses. He possesses a bluish-black form resembling a lotus flower growing in the autumn. He is found slowly by the yogis. So that described already that the false ego has as its predominating deity or ruler Lord Shankarshan, and the mind has as its predominating deity Aniruddha. So this is produced from and the different demigods as well, although it doesn't mention here. The demigods in the mind are the dikpala, the demigods who are the controllers of the different directions, are produced by the combination of false ego and the mode of goodness. Then, by transformation of false ego and the mode of passion, intelligence takes birth, O virtuous lady. Material intelligence. So one may think, well, why intelligence should be goodness? One may think like that, but actually, intelligence gets full of desire and scheming for material things, and therefore that type of intelligence is born out of passion, false ego and the mode of passion. The functions of the intelligence are to help in ascertaining the nature of an object when they come into view and to help the senses. Now, if we remember earlier, when Kapila Muni was describing to Devahuti the essence of what Sankhya philosophy is and the essence of how to get out of the material world, material consciousness, it's that the attachment that the living, the soul has attachment. It must become attached to things. When that attachment to matter is broken, the attachment not to matter, but the attachment to enjoying matter is broken, and the attachment is turned to Krishna. That is basically the process that Kapila Muni is going to describe. And that is basically what devotional service is. So we have a mind. When that mind stops accepting and rejecting according to the false ego, what's good for the false ego, which means thinking himself the enjoyer, when the living entity identifies himself as the enjoyer, when he stops that and stops using the mind in that way, and rather accepts and rejects based on Krishna, what's good for his advancement in Krishna consciousness, or what's good for Krishna's pleasure, that's the process of Krishna consciousness. The changing of the attachment, the direction that everything is going in from false ego to Krishna's service. When the intelligence, that feverish attachment is broken for myself as the enjoyer of the material energy, and the focus of the consciousness is on Krishna, on service to Krishna, that is Krishna consciousness, that is bhakti, that is the purpose of Sankhya Yoga. Here's more on intelligence. So again, false ego and the motive passion creates intelligence. Doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory, and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristics of intelligence. Prabhupada in his purport describes, according to the Patanjali Yoga system, how these things are also explained, and how through intelligence, proper intelligence, one is able to understand himself as a soul. That's the proper use of intelligence. That we understand that we're not our body and remain fixed in that. That means one's intelligence is strong. Egoism, false ego, in the mode of passion, produces two kinds of senses: the senses for acquiring knowledge and the senses of action. So we're seeing how gradually all those 24 elements that were unmanifested in the pradhan stage are becoming manifested gradually, or step by step, stage by stage. So first the mind was manifested, that was the first thing that's manifested, then the intelligence, or rather first false ego was manifested, then the mind, then intelligence, and now the 10 senses, the knowledge acquiring senses and the senses of action, are manifested from false ego and the mode of passion. The senses of action depend on the vital energy, that means prana. And the senses for acquiring knowledge depend on intelligence, Prabhupada explains in the purport. As far as intelligence is concerned, it is clearly stated here that it is a product of egoism and passion. By practice, one comes to the point of the mode of goodness. And by surrendering or fixing the mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes a very great personality or mahatma. In Bhagavad Gita it is clearly said, some mahatma sadvalabha, such a great soul is very rare. In this verse it is clear that both kinds of senses, the senses for acquiring knowledge and the senses for action, are products of egoism and the mode of passion. And because the sense organs for activity and for acquiring knowledge require energy, the vital energy or life energy or prana is also produced by egoism and the mode of passion. We can actually see, therefore, that those who are very passionate can improve in material acquisitions very quickly. So, this is how the creation is going on. Next, false ego and the products of false ego and the mode of ignorance. So it's going to go from subtle to gross, and grosser and grosser and grosser. So I think we'll stop here, and I think we'll be able, if Krishna allows, we'll be able to complete these in the chapter tomorrow. Any questions? Comments?
Yeah. Under what context this speaks of consciousness as sublimated soul, and here within this context, speaking of Vasudeva, there is something manifest which is interposed on.
Which is?
Interposed on the living entity?
Question,
yeah, along in the same light.
Why is it manifest in the second stage, which is the grosser stage, Mahatattva, instead of Pradhana, which is the most subtle?
Because it's there's no need for it there, that's one thing.
Is there any significance that it's somehow it manifests from that stage, which is more gross, through that stage, which is more...
Because it's undifferentiated. Because that is it's closer to Brahman. The Brahman stage is where there's basically no consciousness. There's no chit. It's covered. Wait, one at a time, one stage at a time. But this is my understanding. It's just at this stage, individual consciousness or the consciousnesses begin to manifest, that's my understanding. And the consciousness is Mahatattva. And some say that it's hard to, sometimes we, because there are so many different religions, and the sincere worshippers in different religions. So where do they go? What results do they get? So some say the Buddhists will go to places like this in the material world, but undifferentiatedness within the material world, so that maybe they can go to the Pradhan or the Mahatattva, something like that.
But as Prabhu said, the consciousness is an intrinsic quality of the jiva.
Right. So it isn't the jiva, but it's a characteristic. That was basically your consciousness, yes. Your question, exactly. Right? So when we talk about this consciousness being pure consciousness, it seems like it's comparatively pure consciousness. It's because we're talking about, for instance, Krishna consciousness. So there's Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochati Nakanchati Sama Saveshu Bhuteshu Madhvaktim Labhate Param. This is the platform on which one can attain Krishna consciousness, as opposed to Krishna consciousness. So this clean consciousness, or basically pure pacified consciousness, is the platform on which one can become Krishna conscious, but it isn't itself Krishna consciousness. Something else has to be added. And that something else is some of the internal energy, Ladini Sambit. Now we're back on this side of the question. Yeah, how does that...
Yeah, so that means that this, when you speak of Siddhisattva or Vasana, Chitta, it's nothing to do with the consciousness of one's eternal identity.
It seems to be it's a manifest. I can only speak as far as my understanding goes at this point. Can't really speak fully authoritatively. But the Sudha Sattva is a manifestation of Balaram. Mm-hmm. And it's the platform on which, it's a required prerequisite platform on which the internal energy rests of Ladini Sambit. At least it's missing something. This Sudasattva, perhaps, is different from the Vasudasattva in the spiritual world. Because this is in the material world. So sometimes we understand that the difference is between the goodness in the spiritual world and the goodness in the material world is that the goodness in the material world is contaminated. This is all very technical, in case you didn't notice it, if you're not following it. That's true, certainly true, but it's more than that as well. It's only contaminated, but it's a reflection. It's different because it is contaminated. That's a symptom of its difference, rather than the only difference. That's my understanding. So this is consciousness that's there, but it's not the full consciousness, because look what the qualities of that consciousness are. It's peaceful. It's basically the qualities of goodness. And to get Krishna is beyond goodness. Krishna consciousness is beyond goodness. It's beyond peace. It's beyond that kind of happiness. It's beyond knowledge even. This type of knowledge. There's no Ladini in there. There's no consciousness of the living entity's eternal identity. This is my understanding.
And you're linking it with the Sambit.
Huh?
You're linking that consciousness with Sambit without Ladini, is it? From Balama. In relationship to Balama.
You're looking at it with? That's the part that's confused me about your statement.
No, just based on what you said previously.
It's consciousness means self-awareness. But of the eternal identity, I meant. Of one's actual identity. Because when it described it, didn't describe in that consciousness is awareness of one's relationship with Krishna. I'm afraid that's the best I'm able to do. In my understanding, yeah.
It's the ordinary context, material energy, material energy. But then
he does indirectly.
Indirectly. So then Mars with the living entities, which are eternal, and time, which is eternal.
Yes.
The karma is also there. It's not eternal.
So karma is, karma is not eternal.
So how does that come in contact? Also,
yeah, it's, you didn't you ask this question months and months and months ago? Huh? Do you remember what my answer was? I can't remember. Probably I changed the subject. See, Krishna must have a way of dealing with it inside of him, because he has the material energy inside of him too. So it's in an unmanifest, subtle form. Everything is an unmanifest, subtle form. So he has a way of having that inside of him, while obviously it doesn't have anything to do with his spiritual nature. He's not directly touching it. You know, there may be some in-between shakti, like Lord Shiva Shambhu or something like that. I don't know exactly how he does it, but he does it. Like when you ask the first, in following Sri Radha Raman's question, you ask the question, why does Krishna... So I can't say why Krishna does what he does. But you didn't exactly mean why, you mean how what is the system in which he does it?
Well, is there a significance to that?
To what?
The fact that the consciousness becomes manifest through a stage which is grosser than the previous stages. When there's just the stage of pradana, is the closest to Brahman, that's obviously the most subtle impossible state.
So therefore, that's the indication that there's some element of it being material consciousness in there. So it's not full, and the symptoms of it, what's being described, is not full spiritual consciousness. Right?
Yeah.
Clearly. What are the symptoms of that? Again, I'll read them. Yeah, they're basically mode of goodness.
22.
Huh? 22?
Yeah.
Is this confusing everyone further?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Because these type of questions, super technical questions, but people who have been listening to it a lot longer, even by people who have been studying it, because you didn't even hear the first three times we went over this. It was gone over three other times in this canto, but this is the most detail we're going into this point about the jivas and the nature of the illusion and the nature of this initial creation. But the basic idea should be clear. Hopefully, it should be clear how the Lord manifests the pradhan, and then by his glance into the pradhan, it's differentiated further, and it goes from the potential and it starts getting grosser, from the subtle to the gross. And then from that, when the living entities are in there, by the force of the time factor and their karma, it starts manifesting further. And the first manifestation is false ego in the three modes of material nature. And from that, gradually everything else is manifest. In Mahatattva, the next stage, or Prakriti Mahatattva, that's when consciousness becomes manifest.
But you made an important point, and I missed it, about the Mahatattva, you said it was important.
Probably the point that the living entities have to manifest consciousness, but they can't manifest their actual identity, which is with Krishna, because they're in the material world and they want to be in the material world. So they have to manifest their consciousness through false ego. So as soon as there is consciousness for the soul, false ego is manifest automatically, because they have to do it. And that false ego is in three different varieties. So in that sense, all false ego is a reflection of consciousness. It's consciousness, but reflected in matter, as opposed to consciousness in the spiritual world. It's reflected in matter. That's what false ego is. That was
the... In the spiritual
world? Huh?
What is the consciousness reflected
to?
I thought
you said
matter.
Consciousness coming through their by virtue of the misuse of their free will is reflected into matter. And it has to come through, and false ego is created by that. Because it can't be manifest in the spiritual world, because that's not their desire. 22 says the Sutta Sattva. The mode of goodness. 22. So the mode of goodness, it's equating mode of goodness with consciousness basically here too. So it's talking about consciousness and the mode of goodness. So consciousness becomes manifest, or Vasudev consciousness is what the Sanskrit is used. Vasudevakyam, by the name of Vasudev, known as Vasudev consciousness. So it's pure consciousness basically, whose characteristics are serenity, clarity, and freedom from distraction. So it's basically, it's in the mode of goodness. Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kapila Muni ki jai.